upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And welcome to Technocracy News. Today is November 5th, 2019, and we're working our way towards Thanksgiving now. I hope we have something to be thankful for by the time we get there. I expect we will. But in the meantime, we need to talk about Los Angeles again and Mayor Eric Garcetti. He declared recently that Los Angeles was going to follow the Green New Deal path. That's like the yellow brick road, except it's green. And he's going to deliver Los Angeles into a new green utopia that will fight climate change at the same time. Maybe he thinks he's single-handedly going to beat climate change. But while much of the state in California burns, and it seems like a lot has burned, devastating to property, devastating to animals, devastating to some people who lost their lives, while Los Angeles has burned, Mayor Garcetti has decided it's time to plant trees. So, according to the Green New Deal that he is creating, he's launched a new tree planting project in Los Angeles to create a tree canopy over the city. I hope they build some extra fire protection into it, because the way Los Angeles does things these days, a tree canopy probably will catch fire and burn everything down in its path. I wrote at the top of this article, LA Mayor Eric Garcetti's Green New Deal includes a massive tree planting project to increase the size of the urban forest in order to mitigate global warming. This is comparable to Nero playing the fiddle while Rome burned. And you can go ahead and look up and see whether that's historically accurate or not. Most people agree that Nero did not play the fiddle, because the fiddle was not invented until the 11th century. But he was entertaining himself while he watched Rome burn, and that seems to be what the mayor is doing in Los Angeles. You would think there would be other issues more important, like getting the homeless off the street. The article states Los Angeles is creating a new street tree inventory to guide how it grows and manages the city's urban forest. The inventory comes on the heels of the city's launch of tree planting season. The inventory will allow Los Angeles's Bureau of Street Services to collect better data and identify trends while determining the best practices for tree planting. The inventory is a key step in meeting goals laid out in the city's Green New Deal, which include planting 90,000 trees by 2021 and increasing the tree canopy in areas of greatest need by 50% by 2028. And you might figure, according to a technocrat mind, that collecting data is always the first thing to do. What's the problem? Well, there's not enough data. Once we have enough data, why, we'll know what to do with it, and we'll know how to choose our outcomes carefully and wisely. The article continues, the planting effort was supported by a state grant that will bring 1,200 trees to Central and South Los Angeles. In addition to improving neighborhood aesthetics and providing shade, trees help address serious health concerns like asthma, which disproportionately impacts South LA residents, said Councilmember Marquise Harris Dawson in a statement. Los Angeles has been making headway on tree-related initiatives to mitigate the effects of climate change. Last month, the city launched Cool Streets LA, a program designed to reduce temperatures within communities and to diminish a metro area's urban heat island effect. Planting more trees is one of the main cooling features, along with installing cool pavement and adding more cool roofs. Mayor Eric Garcetti also appointed the first city forest officer this summer. The tree planting and canopy inventory efforts join others listed in the Green New Deal to promote a cleaner environment and a more resilient city. The Green New Deal accelerated existing climate goals and added new, more aggressive goals to, quote, meet the magnitude of this climate crisis, Mayor Garcetti said in the document. It also includes the goals of converting the city's vehicle fleet to zero emissions by 2028, ensuring all new buildings are emissions-free by 2030, and ensuring 57% of new housing units are built within 1,500 feet of transit by 2025. So, Mayor Garcetti, while you're busy creating your utopia in Los Angeles, everyone else in the world really wishes you'd kind of take care of your homeless problem and get the people off the streets and worry about things like affordable housing and health for all those people. You've got rats running in the street. You've got diseases spreading, and you're worried about your precious Green New Deal. Something's horribly wrong with this picture, Mayor. The second story concerns public-private partnerships and the 5G rollout. The headline of this story is Public-Private Partnerships Proposed for 5G Rollout. I wrote at the top of this article, the concept of public-private partnerships was originally invented by the United Nations to implement sustainable development, aka technocracy, of course, since 5G is key to total surveillance and key to sustainable development in general. It is no surprise that P3s are playing a central role, and they are. This article states cities should deliberate about partnering with businesses and forming infrastructure strategies if they are to have success with 5G rollout. Speakers from early 5G testbed said Monday at the DC 5G conference in Arlington, Virginia. And yes, this week there was a major 5G conference in Arlington, and experts came from all over the world to discuss how to do it. The article continues, the Smart Docklands project from Dublin, Ireland, has brought 5G to a 1.5 square mile area east of the city. And with it, officials have been rolling out small cell infrastructure to help close coverage gaps. Those small cells have been installed on all manner of city infrastructures, including lampposts, trash cans, and stoplights. Edward Emanuel, Smart Docklands project management and governance lead, said, given the historic nature of the city, they have to be, quote, really strategic with the infrastructure they use. We can't just drill holes into them and stick things up, he said. Meanwhile, Salford in Greater Manchester, UK, has looked to leverage its mixed-use Media City UK development at a 5G innovation hub, where businesses are shown how the technology can help make their operations more efficient through various accelerator programs. John Corner, chief digital officer at the City of Salford, said it has been effective as a, quote, mechanism to bring companies in so they can start to discover that their innovations can be enhanced by 5G networks. In just a few years, both Dublin and Salford have become leading 5G testbeds, but they needed to show their desire to be innovative to find private partners. Emmanuel said Dublin has a reputation for not being an innovative city, perhaps due in part to its long history of aging infrastructure. But after reaching out to business partners and showing their plans, private sector companies were surprised. It was a similar story in Salford, which undertook fast development of its Media City project while conversations were ongoing with UK telecoms about partnering on fiber rollout. Those conversations sparked more discussions about how to partner on 5G, Corner said, and private companies were immediately positive once they learned of potential use cases. He said, I feel a really strong desire among those private companies to say, quote, we're very interested. For U.S. cities, it shows the importance of a coherent strategy around the approval and siting of small cells, something the Federal Communications Commission looked to streamline in a ruling last year, which is now the subject of court challenges. Meanwhile, U.S.-based telecom companies have continued to make big promises about the rollout of mobile 5G and are beginning to bring the technology into several cities. This is indeed an article that I suggest you read if you're interested in 5G and how it's coming to a city near you, because in fact the public-private partnership aspect a 5G rollout means essentially that the 5G players are handing out licenses to collect data to all these private companies. And of course, if a private company did invest money into a smart city project that involved 5G, who do you think will be the first to harvest the data that results from it? Of course, it's the corporations. The cities like to collect data too, and they're willing to sell it to the corporations. But this is a kind of bonding within cities that nobody is going to want in the end. City infrastructure like this should be controlled by the cities and the citizens, not by the corporate world. So again, that story is public-private partnerships proposed for 5G rollout. The last story is titled Warning, Most Eco-Friendly Products Do More Harm Than Good. This indeed is a pet peeve of mine. I have noticed for some time that as companies greenwash their products, calling them eco-friendly, or trying to make an argument for their products because they are saving the environment, that something is horribly wrong with this picture. Most of the things, or many of the things that people are saying are really eco-friendly, are just the opposite. They're not. I wrote at the top of this article, branding products as eco-friendly is the hottest rage, pandering to virtue signal customers, but the reality is very different. Most eco-friendly products are more harmful than their normal counterparts. This article states, make no doubt about it, it's now trendy to be the most planet-loving, alternative energy-supporting, climate-changing, fighting Captain Planet that you can be. And what would being a friend to environment be without sanctimoniously ridiculing those who disagree with you or who aren't on your level of sustainability? Just ask Greta Thunberg. But as often happens with virtue signaling, the reality of the matter is far askew from how pretentious environmentalists present it. In fact, RT reports, yes, that's Russia Today, that avoiding all of the green eco-friendly products available on the market could be the best way to actually help the environment. Often lost in the fray is the fact that the fight against climate change is going to make some people very wealthy. May I intercede and say rich? The world will invest $90 trillion in new infrastructure in order to fight climate change over the next 10 to 15 years, as reports show that consumers will pay more to buy sustainable, earth-friendly products. Unilever says that a third of consumers buy based on a brand's environmental impact. One-fifth of consumers favor green messaging, the same data shows. But not all products billed to be friendly to the environment actually are. For instance, organic farming, quote, isn't the planet saver as promoted as, according to a study published last month in Nature Communications. The study shows that farming crops like beans, potatoes, and oats organically creates more emissions over the entire course of the farm-to-table cycle than farming conventionally. Researchers at Cranfield University said, quote, trying to get all of Britain eating organic would create an environmental catastrophe. Organic farming actually requires more land than conventional farming because it yields a smaller harvest per crop. The Cranfield University report shows that if England and Wales switched to organic farming, they would need five times as much land for agriculture. Shipping would drive carbon costs sky high. Despite the benefits of soil and water health improving dramatically without the conventional runoff from regular farming, lowering emissions, however, would be impossible without a major shift in diet. This puts farmers into a precarious position, RT notes. Quote, this places farmers in the uncomfortable position of having to choose between protecting biodiversity, popular pesticides have been implicated in the mass death of bees, which are critical to maintaining adequate food supply via pollination, and lowering emissions. A one-size-fits-all approach is unlikely to work. While organic farming represents just 1.4% of the total world farmland, the industry has mushroomed over the past decade, worth $97 billion annually as of 2017. The article continues, other renewable energy, like solar, is also not as green as it sounds. Solar panel manufacturing is a toxic mess, as panels are produced using carcinogenic, mutagenic, heavy metal cadmium, and requiring billions of liters of water to manufacture and cool. Electric vehicles also have a dark side. More energy is consumed in the production of electric vehicles than of gas cars. Meanwhile, a 2011 study showed that the carbon footprints of both vehicles are about the same. EVs may not produce emissions while driving, but the piece notes what we all know. They're only as green as the electricity that's used to charge them. Additionally, batteries in EVs are loaded with toxic chemicals like lithium, copper, and cobalt. The mining of these substances is devastating to the environment, and batteries need to be disposed of in a way that does not allow them back into the environment. Meanwhile, biomass and biofuels also generate more carbon emissions than fossil fuels to create the same amount of energy. Substances that burn under the guise of biomass often can include anything from timber waste to garbage and can oftentimes litter the atmosphere with pollutants. Even burning clean wood often means cutting down trees. Even the old adage of paper over plastic has its downside. Paper bags generate more air and water pollution than plastic and actually require more energy to recycle. They take up more space in landfills and require more fuel to ship. Consumers who believe they're saving the earth by requesting paper bags at the supermarket and municipalities who think banning plastic is the answer are sadly misguided, the piece notes. Meanwhile, plastic isn't everything. One researcher at the Scherzhoff Institute of Oceanology said, plastic is cheap to manufacture. Its microparticles are in cosmetics, in detergent, an exfoliant scrub, even in the environmentally friendly one too. A proposed EU ban on microplastics in cosmetics earlier this year sent cosmetic brands scurrying to oppose it, hinting that the billions it would cost the industry would be passed on to consumers. But companies are still scrambling to look as green as possible, eager to give the consumer the idea that they're making the difference when they're really not. Andrew Revkin, founder of Columbia University's Initiative on Communication and Sustainability, said, quote, "We all have this tendency, if you're facing a big complicated issue like climate change or saving the rainforest, if you do one thing like turn out the lights when you leave the room or recycle, it makes you feel like you're off the hook. I think there's a big tendency in human nature just to pull back from really big issues because they require systems change. We're not going to solve the climate crisis by turning out the lights," he said. Will Fowler, creative director of Headspace, concluded, quote, "Brands are allowing people to pat themselves on the back without them personally having to sacrifice anything." And the article concludes, "And they're happy to take your money while they're doing it." Indeed, since sustainable development has turned into a religion, that is, facts don't matter, but only the feeling that they're doing something useful to save the planet, it's all a sham. It has been from the beginning, and it will be until the end. Some fads that society has gone through in the last 50 years were relatively harmless, some less so. But this deception and this fad has the ability to completely change the culture of the world and to disrupt the economic system of the world, but good. Sustainable development as an economic system has never been tried anywhere else. It's never been tested. I have not personally seen one analysis by a legitimate economist on what impact sustainable development would have on the world, but I can tell you from my limited analysis, it would not be good. Not to mention that the United Nations is sworn to destroy capitalism and free enterprise, and of course they want to replace it with sustainable development. I'll close again only by saying that this resource-based economic system that the UN has brought us called sustainable development is nothing more than warmed-over technocracy from the 1930s. They wanted to do exactly the same things: control all resources and control all consumption and control all people everywhere. Nothing has changed. It's the same plan. So there's a long list of historical documents available to indicate exactly where we're headed. The problem is nobody wants to pay attention to them. It goes against their religion. So don't show them the facts. Don't show them the history. Just leave them alone to believe their own fantasies. Well, if you haven't had a chance yet to share one of my books on technocracy with anybody else, Christmas is coming up. May I suggest that it would be a good time to pick up some copies of either Technocracy Rising or Technocracy: The Hard Road to World Order. Wrap them up nice and pretty, put them in a nice gift bag, and give them away to some friends, to some colleagues, to some coworkers. How about all of the city council members in your city? How about your county commissioners and your zoning commission? How about the city manager who wrote your general plan and who's doing all the sustainable development stuff in your city? You could do some real good this season. I hope you take opportunity and do it. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.